It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Good morning, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb. How you doing?
You know, we could cheer all we wanted to, and none of our teams had success.
We kind of came up short, but, yeah, you know.
Congratulations to them for making it that far.
Yeah, and absolutely. I love to watch good basketball, and we saw some good basketball.
We did. Good. We did.
Excellent ball players. It was fun to watch.
And we also saw a heck of a lot of people.
a lot of people there.
Did you ever get enough seats for your family to sit in one row?
We moved down and we got a pretty good seat, right kind of in the middle there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we are back in the saddle with Dr. History, and what are we going to talk about today?
Well, before we get going, I want to thank a few people.
Okay.
Jeff, a truck driver who has sent me some comments, lives right around here locally. John, who sent me some information about Malawi, Africa.
Okay.
Peter, who lives in Rhode Island. That's a little ways from us, Zeb. Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
And Melody in Washington, Olympia, Washington.
Oh, my goodness. They're ready to jump on us from way over there.
Yeah, and then there's a Mr. S.E. Swap, who I read his book called The Clevenger Gold, which is a true story about murder and lost treasure. So I just want to thank those people
for those comments. You know, it's so interesting you should bring this up quickly, because I had a guy, I won't mention any names, and I won't mention his business. I called him here about 2-3 weeks ago. Well, nobody listens to talk radio anymore, and he gave me the spiel, and I said, oh, really? And then I gave him some of the stats on this program. And, you know, some people, you can lead them to water, but they won't make a sandwich out of it.
They won't listen. All right, we're going to get into this, Zeb. How about range wars, sheep men versus cattle?
They had one right here.
They did, but we're not going to talk about that one.
Oh.
Okay, we're going to go over to the middle part of Oregon.
Okay,
this is where all this took place.
Over by Burns?
More right, actually, in the middle, so not too far from Burns. Yeah.
I see, okay.
So just picture this. Even for men used to seeing slaughter, what these guys were seeing was really a bad sight. 500 sheep belonged to Fred Smith lay dead in the desert, shot to death. The corpses lay scattered among the lava rocks and the clumps of sagebrush.
Somebody shot 500 sheep?
It was New Year's Day, 1905, and it was war.
Okay? Oh, my.
Now, that afternoon, six men on horseback, disguised with masks and black faces, had descended upon the helpless shepherd as he was tending his flock. And they surrounded the frightened and unarmed guy. The riders jumped off their horses. They held him to the ground. They tied his wrists and his ankles and blindfolded him.
Oh, my.
Now, with the shepherd incapacitated, his sheep were now helpless, too. The riders remounted their horses and began rounding up the animals and gathering together the herd of about 700. Now, with loud cries and war whoops, they drove them a short distance away and from where the shepherd lay, and opened fire with rifles, dropping about 500 sheep right there on the spot.
Wow.
Now, what was left, a couple of hundred, they just ran off into the desert and were probably eaten by coyotes or wolves.
Yeah.
But anyway, their task complete, the six riders galloped off, and it was not the first such slaughter this lonely country had seen in a few years, and it would not be the last. Now, during the mid and late 1800s, cattle ranching was king.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon's rolling rangelands and high plains country, you know, east of the Cascade Mountains. And you've driven through there, Zeb.
Oh, I've rodeoed all over that country.
Beautiful country.
Yes, it is.
But the stockmen from the Willamette Valley in western Oregon had been bringing their cattle to these parts each spring and summer since the 1860s. So for years, you know, 40 years.
Yep.
To take advantage of the good grass, the rangeland, they also drove their herds of cattle, as many as 100,000 head, through that region on their way to help feed gold miners in the mountains of northeast Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a cattle drive coming east rather than west.
Well, it's a sheep drive.
Well, cattle.
Oh, you were talking cattle.
Yeah, the cattle.
I'm sorry, I got lost in the flock of sheep.
Okay, now, pay attention, Seb.
Okay, I'm
okay. Anyway, during this period, you know, the cattle empires, they were being formed throughout the region along with a lot of smaller operations. But right. There were some big cattle barons and great and small.
Didn't most of the cattle barons, as you put it, come up from California?
Yeah. In fact, a lot of the cattle drives actually went right through where we are right here sitting, through southern Idaho, or over into the Oregon area. But by the 1880s, cattlemen and sheepmen were sharing the range and not always peaceably. And during this period and over the following decades, railroad tracks were being laid from the main line along the Columbia River into central Oregon. And there was a town called the town of Shaniko. Have you ever heard of that? Shaniko?
You want to spell that for me?
S-H-A-N-I-K-O.
I do not know that. Is it still in existence?
Well, I don't know. It's in Wasco County.
Wasco County.
Wasco.
Well,
so
I'll look it up.
Okay, so I looked it up, and it is kind of in the middle of the state.
Okay.
But anyway, so this was established in 1879, and on the route of the Columbia Southern Rail Line. By 1903, this little town was being called the wool capital of the world.
Wow.
And was the primary distribution center for virtually all the sheep and wool produced across central and eastern Oregon. So it was a big business right there. But the railroad provided a more efficient and economical ways for both cattlemen and sheepmen to bring their goods to the world market. So it was a good thing for both sides.
Yeah.
But it also caused a little competition on the unregulated open range.
Okay.
Now, from a stockman's point of view, his cattle were here first. They were the first ones here.
Right.
And the open range was his, all right? The shepherd and his sheep were taking what wasn't theirs. There was a lot about sheep and shepherds the cattlemen didn't like. First, there were just too doggone many sheep. It was estimated that between 1885 and 1910, perhaps as many as only 50,000 cattle and 340,000 sheep.
Oh, my.
Sharing this same open range.
Really?
This was not... not a good thing.
Okay? Uh-huh.
So anyway, they looked at it, the cattlemen knew they were outnumbered.
And the plot thickens.
It is going to get thicker. Anyway, something else that kind of bothered the rancher was the sheep's eating habits. And you know this, Zeb. The cattle ate bunch grass and other wild native grasses. The sheep ate those too, but they also grazed on virtually every other weed and flower out on the range, snipping them off close to the ground.
Yep.
The cattlemen could tell when a herd of sheep had moved through an area because it was stripped of nearly all of its vegetation, leaving a virtual moonscape, if you want to call it that, behind. And that didn't sit too well with the stockmen, and you can understand that.
Absolutely.
So, and finally, it was the very nature of the sheep business that kind of rubbed the cattlemen the wrong way. The shepherd usually tended his charges on foot. In cowboy country, real men rode horses. For that, the ranchers looked upon the shepherd and regarded him as kind of an inferior being.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say too much here.
I know, because I grew up with some guys, some of my friends, their dad were sheepmen, and they were also horsemen, too.
Yep.
So, but anyway, it's just getting plain harder and harder for the cattlemen. The ranchers let their cattle graze year-round on the open range. In the spring, they moved their herds into the high country of the Blue Mountains and eastern slopes of the Cascade Mountains, where the animals could... have new grass to feed on. But as more cattle, horses, and sheep came to be grazed in the region, this is when the conflicts erupted, okay? The cattlemen raced to get their cows into the mountains first while the sheepmen drove their flocks with the same idea. They wanted to get there to the area first, you know. So it was only a matter of time before something had to give. So the ranchers got fed up first. They complained about the sheep. Men bringing their flocks into this area, letting them graze right down to where the ranchers were. And that was just too much. Something had to be done. So here's where the plot thickens.
Look out. Time for a commercial? No, we're going to stay with it.
We're going to keep going. Anyway, so the stockmen of the IZ country had a little meeting one day in 1896. They formed a civic organization they called the IZ Sheep Shooters.
I dare you,
sheep
for the
shooters.
Sake of staying on the air, to say that fast five times.
Well, it's going to come a few more times. Okay. Anyway, their new organization would discourage the sheepmen through the persuasive methods of such famous Western diplomats as the Colt 45, the Winchester, and the Smith & Wesson.
I see.
That was their friends. So whenever a flock of sheep came too close to the cattleman's ranch, the IZ sheep shooters would ride out to explain to the sheep.
You're living dangerously.
They went out to the shepherd to explain to him the error of his ways. They would hold him and his camp tender at gunpoint while they shot as many of the offending sheep as possible.
Wow.
It wasn't long before word got out among the cattlemen about what a fine job these IZ sheep shooters were doing.
Folks, I wish you could see his face. He needs a drink.
I got to have a drink.
Okay.
Well, it just so happened that the ranchers to the west of this area were having the same problem with sheepmen bringing in their sheep and crowding the ranchers. So the Paulina ranchers invited a representative from the IZ sheep shooters to come to talk to them about forming a similar organization on their own. So out of this neighborhood came a guy by the name of Henry Snodgrass.
Okay? Snodgrass. Henry
Snodgrass.
Mix Snodgrass in with the other sheep shooters.
Yeah, Snodgrass, the sheep shooter. Anyway, the meeting was held in July of 1898 under a ponderosa pine tree. Nearly 40 men gathered around a roaring campfire, and they listened to Snodgrass describe how the IZ sheep shooters operated and what its mission was. Now, secrecy and above all loyalty were imperative in success for evading the law. All right? Because obviously it was against the law to go out and shoot people and their animals.
Duh.
So anyway, the leader declared that if any man did not want to join the brotherhood of sheep haters and was unwilling to do what was necessary to drive the sheep out of the country, he should leave now and go home and go to bed. In other words, it's kind of like, if you're a coward, go ahead and get up and leave.
Yeah, but there's a right and a wrong.
I know.
It wasn't anything to do with being cowardly.
No, but I think there was some pressure.
Yeah.
So to speak. Now, the rules of the game were so serious that an oath had to be taken by each man who wanted to be a member. If while they were engaged in killing sheep, it became necessary to kill a shepherd or a camp tender, the victim would be buried on the spot. If one of their members were killed in the course of a sheep shooting operation, his body would be brought home for burial. Now, and if any other company were apprehended by the law and made to stand trial, his fellow vigilantes were obligated to lie under oath to protect him. So it was
kind of a secret society thing. KKK type thing.
Yeah. So Snodgrass went around the campfire man by man and made each man swear to these conditions.
Wow.
Now, the Inland Sheep Shooters were born. That's the new organization.
Inland
Sheep Shooters.
Okay.
Now, the other sheep shooters sprang up locally here and there along the Oregon rangeland. So there were other smaller groups doing the same thing. But the Inland Sheep Shooters would become the largest and most effective of the bunch. Between 1898 and 1906, the ranchers would destroy thousands of sheep and murder one man.
Wow.
Now, the first thing the Paulina stockmen did was to establish a boundary, which they called a deadline. And that we had one of those right here, Zeb.
Deadline Ridge?
Yeah. Over which they would let no sheep pass. Well, they marked the boundary, sent a warning to the sheepmen that any sheep that crossed south of that would be killed. Well, the biggest sheep slaughter that the Paulina stockmen ever pulled off was at a place called Benjamin Lake. And again, this is right in mid-Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
1903, that spring, three different sheep men from a place called Summer Lake had brought their sheep to Benjamin Lake, making for a combined flock of about 2,700 sheep.
2,700?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, arriving at camp and wearing masks, a posse of sheep shooters jumped the herder on duty, put a sack over his head. They went looking for the tender, which is another sheep man, and slipped a sack over his head. The sheep shooters casually rode out of camp and into this 2,700 sheep, Zeb. They began shooting, and when they were done, they had shot 2,400 sheep.
That's
a lot of sheep.
That is a lot of sheep.
And the sheep killing continued in February 1904. Five masked and armed men attacked a camp containing 3,000 head and destroyed a whole bunch of those. 4 months later, 10 masked men killed more than 2,000 sheep. And more than 1,000 sheep died in another raid in July that same year. So we're getting to thousands.
Think, though, of the logistics of the situation, carrying all that ammunition. And then also, where was the law?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. So, anyway, the local newspaper, the Morning Oregonian in Portland, provided an annual report. They said between 8,000 and 10,000 sheep slaughtered during that, quote, shooting season.
Well, okay, I don't mean to beleaguer this point, but if they knew there was a problem and there were past problems, why weren't there law officials trying to curb the problem?
I'm going to bet that the sheepmen may have been a lot of times foreigners, and the cattlemen were longtime residents of the area. And I'm just guessing that the lawmen were their friends.
I see.
So that's just my guess.
Okay.
But anyway, the sheepmen had tried to work out their differences with the stockmen. In 1904, the Central Oregon Wool Growers Association held a meeting to discuss the range war and appointed several emissaries to meet with the cattlemen to discuss a truce, but it was a no-go. Cattlemen, they weren't going to do it. So the sheep killings continued, and the sheepmen's sheds and haystacks were burned. So it wasn't just it was property besides animals.
What did the sheepmen do, if any, in retaliation?
As far as we know, nothing. They were way outnumbered. And if you think about it, a cattle ranch requires a lot more men to take care of cattle than the sheep.
Yeah.
I mean, really, two people can handle 3,000 sheep.
But you would think that these guys going in, whether they were foreigners or not, whether they were Basque or whatever, coming into this area, they would have researched it a little bit after there were previous problems so that they didn't have the problems.
Yeah. Well, in 1904, there was a sheep herder. He was a paid visit by a group of masked men. They warned him to remove his sheep. A couple of weeks later, they returned, riding into them, more than 2,000 sheep, shouting. They panicked animals, actually began to stampede, and ran over a nearby cliff. So they killed, several thousand just by that.
Wow.
Well, you know, ironically, the range war that probably killed at least 10,000 sheep and one man was ended not by lawmen, but by the stroke of a pen. In 1902, the federal government established what they called the Blue Mountains Forest Reserve. Now, this divided those lands into grazing allotments for both the sheepmen and the cattlemen.
Well, is that over there by Pendleton, then?
I believe it is,
yeah.
But the range war was ended at that point, and, you know, that was kind of the end of it. But, see, to say that there was only one man killed, right here by us, Zeb, there were three sheepmen killed. There was a guy named Gobo Fango that was killed over by Oakley.
Right.
There was Wilson and Cummings that were killed right over here by Rock Creek.
Right.
And that was the big story about Diamond Field Jack, that they thought had killed those two sheepmen when, in fact, he did not.
It just seems to me, and naturally I've always been on the side of the cattle. I mean, that's the way I was born, etc. But you would have thought that after initial problems, there could have been some kind of a meeting of the minds so that they could work out something that would be acceptable to both parties. Or did the cattlemen say there is no acceptability, you're all going to leave?
Well, and I wonder a little bit about the stubbornness of the sheepmen. You know,
that's exactly the point I'm getting at.
So, you know, why?
I mean, neither side is guiltless.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So the sheepmen, maybe if they would have kept their sheep in the areas designated,
there you go,
they would have been okay. Now, like you, Zeb, I grew up with cattle, but I also had some of my good friends that their dads had sheep, and I helped them herd sheep on several occasions in the summer. And in fact, you know, you probably remember this. They used to go into the beet fields after the beets had been harvested and section off a 80-acre field, and the sheep would go in there and eat the beet tops.
Yeah.
And after that, they'd move them maybe to another beet field.
It just seems to me that there could have been some kind of a copacetic relationship.
Yeah, and I guess finally it did happen, but after the loss of thousands and thousands of sheep, and I guess luckily only one man that was killed, at least over in that area.
Yeah.
But this happened not just in Oregon, you know. Like I say, it happened here, right around us, here in southern Idaho. I'm sure other areas, maybe probably Montana.
How big a region, if you will, state by state, was really a problem for sheep and cattlemen? Do you know?
You know, I don't. In reading this story, I looked up on the internet to kind of get an idea geographically.
Yeah.
And it looks like it was mostly on the east side of the Cascade Mountains.
This way.
Yeah, and towards, like you said, Pendleton, Oregon, over that direction.
Yeah.
Kind of east and maybe northward a little bit.
Wow.
But again, during this time, you know, there's a lot of miners.
Another thing, too, that really bothers me is you mentioned about the sheep herder. And basically, he's probably got, what, 2,000, 2,500 head of sheep?
Right.
You would have thought after the initial problem that the sheep owners would have said, hey, we need more security.
Right. Well, and even now, Zeb, when you go down the road, you can look out and you can see a sheep camp.
Yeah.
And you can see...
one man, three dogs, and one horse.
And one horse.
Yeah. That's it.
And that's all they need, which, compared to cattle... You know, it's much easier to take care of a herd of sheep.
One rider, three dogs, they went that away.
Yeah. But anyway, just another kind of story about the range wars that
took
place.
And it's not that long ago.
No,
when you
really
think
wasn't.
About it.
No.
I mean, you said 1906, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, that's not that far ahead of your and my birth. And,
that's
and
true.
There was a lot of things going on.
A lot closer to your birth.
Nah, don't give me a hard time. But no, seriously, I mean, when you look at history, some of the outlaws and some of the things that happened, not that far ahead of us.
Well, consider Diamond Field Jack.
Absolutely.
Lived until about, I think it was like 1952.
Yeah, well, he's killed by a taxi cab down in Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas. He got hit. Here's a guy that had escaped being hung and killed a number of times. And he gets
run over by a yellow cab.
And
that'll teach him to wave his arm and ask for a cab.
And was penniless.
Had nothing.
He
got in the gold business, too,
and he became a multimillionaire after this, all that happened here in Idaho.
Yeah.
Down in Nevada, he went and discovered some gold mines, and he was a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Lost it all.
And got run over by a taxi. See, be careful.
Yeah, watch out for taxis.
I appreciate that story. What are we going to talk about next week? You're going to have a little vacation.
I might. It just could happen.
All right. Well, I want to tell you how much I appreciate that, and fortunately today has it subsided.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. Once again, Zeb, thanks to those people that I mentioned at the beginning of the station. I always email back. When people send me comments, I always email back to them and thank them.
What about the man in Rhode Island, though? What did he say?
He just kind of,
tuned us in, huh?
Yeah, they just kind of listen and they enjoy the.
What's his name? We'll say good morning to him.
Peter.
Peter. Hello, Peter back in Rhode Island.
Jeff and John and Peter and Melody. Yes, thank you for listening.
Thank you.